You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It is the Anfield Wrap. I am Neil Atkinson and I am joined by Sean O'Donnell, Harriet Pryor and Rob Gutman on this one. It's going to be all about Mo Salah. Mo Salah, the announcement, how we all felt about it, how good it feels to get him tied down, and then the idea of how it might well change Liverpool's attack. We'll also be looking at the wage structure and the financial aspects of this and contemplating the rest of his career that is to come and where he is in Liverpool greatness circles. As well, my voice is a little bit strange here at the start, but we'll be all right in the end. Also, Sam, is that the sort of intro you're looking for these days? Have I nailed that for you there? You said to me you wanted me to do it so that I say to everybody what the show's going to be about. Are we comfortable and happy? Marv, do you think that went well?
I think it went terrific.
Do you think so? Apart from my voice stopping, it's like I wasn't even used to that level of structure. Yeah, it's absolutely fine. The listeners understand they're with us 100%. They're also excited about Mo Salah. Download the app for lots and lots of things about Mo Salah, including James Pearce giving us the background to all the detail that is to come later on today as well. And lastly, come to the London live show, the 9th of July in London and Hackney at Earth. I am not messing about. Come to the London live show. I'm imploring you to come to the London live show. We will have a lot of fun at the London live show. Come to Hackney Earth Saturday night. It will be an absolute belter. All right then. And thank you to everyone who walked 21 miles with us at the HSA walk as well over the weekend. That is all your admin done. Let's just get into Mo Salah and how happy we were, Rob Gutman. Mad how given over to the opposite many of us were. There are a few genuine surprises around negotiations like these days. It's fair to say that Friday was a genuine surprise.
Yeah, it was. And I'm still surprised. And yet, I feel surprised we were surprised, but we were surprised. The Klopp announcement earlier in the season, I think, came from left field a bit, but the fact of it wasn't a surprise in itself. I think there had been a mood music which was moving in a direction that the manager at some stage was going to say he'd extend. And that was a massive deal. But with Mo Salah, all the mood music was about the player leaving. I mean, I think as a fan base, 98% of us, let's just pick a number, I think were resigned to the fact that we were going to be watching him for one last time, or at the very least, were in denial about not wanting to think about this contract anymore. The fact I personally thought it was possible it could renew, but I felt that Mo and his team and Rami would play Liverpool for all the brinkmanship that they could play and go right to the wire, like Kylian Mbappe, quite frankly, did with Paris Saint-Germain. Which I thought might prove to be a bit of a marker deal, that one, because we've not really seen that before. Maybe Mesut Ozil did it, or Aubameyang did it with Arsenal, but that's Arsenal. But Mbappe did it with PSG, and he came out the winner, really. And I could have seen Salah doing the same, or if not at all. So it did come very much from left field. You wonder about the timing with these things. I don't think they suddenly, maybe just being cynical for the sake of being cynical, I don't think they suddenly agreed on the Thursday and it got announced on the Friday. I think it probably had moved significantly quite some time before then. So I think it's interesting. So the timing, therefore, is interesting. Why then? I mean, maybe it is just as simple as they had done it on the Thursday, but it did feel to me it's on the cusp of the return to pre-season training. Yeah. It's such a fillip for the squad as much as it is for the supporter base. So it felt time to me, felt choreographed, and brilliantly so, let me add.
Brilliantly so, Sean. The surprising sort of aspect of it is that it moves from very, very, you know, it is 0-60 stuff. You very rarely get that these days, as Rob says. Normally there's mood music, normally there's suggestions knocking around to the point that some people were jumping off on the deep end because his agent made a tweet. And yet it flips so, so quickly. I think it is all about pre-season training. I sort of get the impression, it's interesting, back when he was saying, I will definitely be playing for Liverpool next season. Yeah. It sort of makes me think now that he may well have been thinking, this will get boxed by then. And that to me now feels like he sort of knew then he was just going to get this sorted one way or another.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because we were all resigned to, as we've sort of alluded to, or at least the vast majority of us was resigned to him going at the end of next season. But on what evidence? Like, what if you look at, if you go back and look at all the evidence, Klopp was very relaxed about everything. He said it'll get done, we'll sort it out. Then Salah always made the noises, I want to stay at Liverpool. It's not like Salah was saying, oh, I might go to Barcelona, I might go to Real Madrid. He was saying, I want to stay at Liverpool.
Journalists had got the fear, though. They put the fear into us. The broader press pack, I would say.
Yeah. I know what you're saying, but I just feel like it's another great example of Liverpool getting the business right. And listen, we're saying getting the business right. We've got three seasons to see what happens, but you know, all the evidence would point to that they've got this one right. Because as I say, you look back at it, it feels to me what's happened, it's been like a sort of series of events, and they've maybe, and you know, we spoke about Mane going or whatever, and maybe they've just been, instead of saying no, hard no, we're not going to change our wage structure, they've sat on this demand or sat on this and they've thought, how can we make this happen? And it feels like that's what's happened over the last 6 months. It's like, it was a case they're always going to do what they can or get as close to his demand.
I think it might also have changed for him, because if you go over the last 6 months, the thing I keep coming back to is, from Salah's point of view, over the last 6 months, Liverpool have firstly shown that they can challenge on all fronts, yeah. Which, if we are fair, even though there's loads of mitigating circumstances, doesn't happen in the 2020-2021 season. That's the first thing. Diaz signs, that's the next thing. Yeah. Klopp signs, that's the next thing. And Darwin signs, that's in there as well. You know, all of these things are things that happen, not just the idea of Mane going. There's all these other things as well that maybe make Salah think, you know what, it's not going to... And also, he has to put up with AFCON. He has to put up with playing in not for Liverpool, has to go through those struggles, those trials and tribulations. Yeah. Do you know, I wonder if all of these things has made him go, we need to find a solution to this.
Absolutely. And I think where could he go? Like, he's talking about, there's rumours that he would consider going back to Chelsea and stuff like that. Personally, I think that was more of a scare tactic to Liverpool to say, I will go and play in the Premier League if we don't get this sorted. Because, you know, for anyone, it's bad news for Barcelona and Real Madrid, because their chance of coming back to being a superpower in football doesn't seem like it's around the corner. It seems like it's...
Real Madrid just beat us in the Champions League final, to be fair, Sean.
That's a good point.
They're not knocking around going, oh, we're in real bother here.
Well, yeah, maybe more Barcelona then, but I think, Barcelona, definitely.
I think you're right.
But
yeah. I think they were shite.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I mean, listen, the Real Madrid won the Champions League. Anyone wins the Champions League, but we know how they won it in the circumstances they won it. In terms of being a true superpower in football, I think it's Liverpool and Man City at the moment.
So do I.
And I don't see the shift going to Barcelona in time soon.
Well, no, I think that's a really important point as well, to be fair, Harriet. I am on board with the idea that every chance, you know, he spent at least 6 months last season being the best player on the planet. I'd argue that three of the five best players on the planet all play the football in the northwest of England. They all love Liverpool and they all love Calvin Harris, as we saw over the course of the weekend. They are... And I think that's where, you know, if you want to be at the very, very top, you know, again, from Salah's point of view, if you want to be at the very, very top, this is the place to be, at the very, very top, with a side that's already geared not to solely get the best out of you, but in the way in which it gets the best out of itself as a byproduct, gets the best out of you.
Yeah, I think firstly, on a personal level as well, he it was quite clear that he said that his family was settled here, he didn't want to leave the sort of area in general. And I think you have to not underestimate the fact that that really buys into where footballers want to be, where they feel happy and comfortable with their family. But yeah, on a professional level, it's a situation where you're like, okay, well, if he doesn't stay at Liverpool, there's kind of two options. And you get to next summer and you're thinking, right, where's he going to go? And I think the real fear for us was that he did end up at somewhere like Manchester City, which would have been, I think, probably unlikely, but that were the conversations that had started to arise. And now we have a real sense of clarity that we know what our next 3, 4, 5 seasons looks like. And I think we didn't have that clarity before Salah signed. And that one new contract really does change everything for me. And maybe that's slightly dramatic, but it just feels like the sense of clarity that we had last week is completely different to what we have now. And people are saying it's a saga that's been going on months. It starts in 2020 in the summer, really. That's when Salah's contract negotiations wanted to start. The club at the time was saying because of the pandemic, they didn't want to have those conversations around then. It's sort of lingered since then. And I think at times it has been a distraction. We've all been really wound up by laughing face emojis, more wound up than we ever thought we would be in our life. And there's been so many, you know, interviews from Salah for a player that doesn't speak that much that have sort of been irritating to us as a fan base. And now we just know, and we're going into into that next season with that clarity. We know what's happened. We know what we're dealing with for the next few years. We've got Klopp, we've got Salah, and everything's, yeah, everything good is yet to come.
Yeah, I think the movement in the deal, if you read between the lines, is interesting because it's very few facts apart from there's some, we now have some headline numbers now, and we had a statement, well, a briefing, didn't we, about the contract a couple of months ago, I'm going to say, when Salah's side was sort of hinting that he would only been offered 15% pay rise. Mm-hmm. Now, I think I've seen James Pearce comment on that. That implied his pay rise was being upped from...
He was going to be one of the top 15 players in the world, and now I think this is paid players, and now this has brought him up to the top six, or something. So yeah, that was where they were starting negotiations with the 15th best paid. Yeah.
But here's my theory, which I'll go with, and I could be torn up in a second if somebody presents some other information, but Liverpool's pay structure with their top players, in fact, all their players, I think, during the last 5 years of FSG, Michael Edwards' era, has been very focused on incentive-based pay.
Yeah.
Like if you look at Mo Salah's worldwide earnings, for example, he's earned a lot more than £200,000 a week over the last few years. Now, it won't all have come from Liverpool, but a big chunk of it will have done. But here's what I'm reading it as. I think the 15% would have taken the reported basic of 200 up to 230. Now we're hearing the basic's around 350, which could, with incentives, go to 400.
Yeah.
What I'm reading is that the incentive element has been reduced, narrowed considerably. They've brought the basic up. So I think probably at 230, they're saying, but look, you only have to score 20 goals and you'll be earning 350 anyway.
Yeah.
I think so with the Firmino one, as we discussed the other week, which goes from 68,000 to 1 week where he'll have earned 180,000.
Well, I think Rami and Salah have gone, no, we've earned the respect. We've shown the consistency. You can say we'll earn it, but we want the clarity and the sureness. We want the higher basic. And I think it's stuck on Liverpool going, yeah, but that's how our pay structure works. And I think rather than the total quantums being the issue, I think it's when people talk loosely about Liverpool's pay structure, they mean that balance between basic and incentive. And I think Liverpool have, I'm going to guess here, just reading the between lines again, that they have broken that disparity between incentive and basic.
I'll come back to you on this. There's a repeated, so all the way through what's been really interesting in terms of what's been in almost every story written by every journalist who covers Liverpool, there's been a repeated insistence on the idea that there's been an acceptance amongst the Liverpool squad that Salah is a special case.
Yeah.
And that's what I think. I think your theory is right. I think Liverpool have compromised on where the bonuses live and what the bonuses are. And I think that the argument that will have been made, or may even have been made by some people themselves in the Liverpool squad, the speed with which, for instance, Van Dijk reacts to it suggests that he knew it was on the cards. Mm. What I actually think is that the Liverpool squad are comfortable with the idea of, well, this fella helps us get our bonuses, hit our goals, win our medals, gets us trophies. And I wonder if that almost perhaps had to be almost an honest conversation of, this is what we're doing for this guy. We're not doing that elsewhere. And also, a lot of these players now have got pretty long-term deals anyway, going all the way through to 2025 themselves.
Well, yes. And I think this is why Liverpool have been smart with getting the pre-Salah deals done the way they did the year before. Because let's put it this way, let's use Van Dijk as an example. When he and his agent sat down with Liverpool before he signed about a year ago now, they weren't not aware of the kind of money Mo Salah would be asking for. They were aware there was going to be a disparity. So their eyes were open. Liverpool, so all cards, I'm going to say, were on the table.
They were also aware that Virgil van Dijk had not played a competitive game of football for 8 or 9 months as well, which is also about Liverpool's timing.
Well,
what a gesture of faith that was.
That's a very good point. Yeah. So each case, so there's a case for saying each case on its merits. In his case, the timing was perfect. Jordan Henderson was a player older than Salah or Mane or Van Dijk, older than Thiago. So his was never about whether he got $300,000 a week. It's whether he got something which was still elite level, like over 150 a week. I don't know
consistency. What I think it will have been. Yeah.
Firmino was losing his place and on a wind down, so they could park him. If Firmino wanted to kick up a storm, fine, see you, Bobby, run your contract down, which is what we're actually going to see, I suspect. The only... Trent had signed quite recently, young enough to be for his biggest pay packet to be yet to come, so I think they could park that one as well. The big fly in the ointment was the one player who could see himself as deserving some degree of parity with Salah, and that was Sadio Mane. Yeah. Now, I think a year ago, Sadio was on the back of a very hit-and-miss season, I think if his people had signed then at 180, 200 grand a week, which would have been a case for, then I think that then Sadio might be a Liverpool player today. But I think the getting in of Nunes, I think these are all the moving pieces, and I'll shut up in a sec. The availability and success in getting Nunes, the opportunity for Mane to move on and get a good wage, all those two things had to coalesce to make the Salah deal possible, in my opinion.
So I agree with you, and on some levels, I think that the incentives are still quite heavy. So I was reading this morning that Salah signed up to a lot of incentives because he's so confident that he's going to hit them, that he signed up to them, and that's why he's done it. I think it's been more of a case, I think they were always going to do it. I think it's been more of a case of how do we get that money? Because I think they'll probably, you know, like any business, they'll have, you know, a budget, and the wage budgets will sit in a separate pot to the transfer budget. So they've got the players that they need to get in. They've signed up all the current leadership group or whoever you want to do, be pre-Salah on a certain wage structure, on a certain wage. They've relieved Origi of his wages, which we believe to be 100 grand a week. They relieved Mane of his, which probably were 200 grand a week. And then they've signed in these new young lads on big high transfer fee, but actually low wage.
90 grand, aren't they?
90 grand a week.
Well, I think Darwin's on 140 reportedly, but still, it's not as elite.
It's still freeing up some of that money there for them to be able to go to Salah. Okay, Babels, because I think the telling thing as well, if you believe what you read, then they sent a list of demands to Liverpool, to Mike Gordon, or Rami sent a list of demands, and Liverpool didn't reply. So they didn't say yes or no. If it was a no, they might have said, no, we absolutely cannot do this. If you believe what you read, it sounds like, as I say, they've looked at that and gone, okay, how do we make this happen? As opposed to, you know, I'm not saying they said yes to every single demand. They've probably compromised on a few things. But for me, it's just been about freeing up the money and just the process, basically, and getting what they need to get in order to be able to pay them. Because let's be honest, from a business point of view, you know, again, I'm a quote more of red. So what they've signed up from a wage point of view is going to be over the 3 years, 55 million quid. If Salah goes, yeah, they free up some money from a wage point of view, but 55 million quid to replace Mo Salah, you're not going to get anyone on nowhere near his level. You're talking, what, 150, 200 million. So I think it's clever business all around, and I think they've done a good job.
Yeah,
everyone wins, I think, is what I would say. That's for the player's perspective, he wins because he knows that him staying at Liverpool, he can guarantee a future of success, and he feels like he can go on and win more trophies. And I love his comments about that. I think Salah's team have to feel that they win. I'm actually quite surprised from their perspective that it's happened so soon after Mane leaves, because I think they almost have more power to say, right, your front line is going through a total transformation. You've just lost Sadio Mane. You need Salah to stay more than ever. And so I know he'd committed next season already, but I am surprised that it has happened so quickly, because I think that Salah's team have way more bargaining power than they did perhaps before Mane left. But ultimately they wanted to keep their, you know, they wanted to keep their client happy, and we know what Salah wanted. But also Klopp's a winner. Michael Edwards, like, what an introduction, baptism of fire to his new role.
Can I ask you Julian Ward,
sorry, yeah, he's gone, the old one, yeah, out with the old, yeah.
Can
sorry.
I ask you a question, because you just made me think,
yeah.
Do you think, that it depends which way around it happened, but we are speculating it, do you think there's a degree to which the ease with which Liverpool apparently let Sadio Mane walk away and they replaced him effectively, albeit you can argue whether it was Diaz or Nunes who's his actual replacement, but the ease with which they let that apparently happen may have slightly unnerved Salah's camp, who assumed they held all the cards. Maybe for the first time they thought Liverpool might just let him walk away, and maybe that's not what he wants. Maybe not what his family wants.
I don't know. I think it would personally have done the opposite, because they'd known that the front line had already had such a shake-up, and you want that experience in there. You're bringing in these new players. Okay, Diaz has been there a few months, but he's still not an established Liverpool player. You're bringing Darwin in. You want that right-hand side to be a bit more experienced, a bit more established. And you also want the other players in that front line to have someone to learn from, that knows the system, that knows the players it's going to be around. So if anything, I think they probably had a bit more power and still felt like they held the cards. But maybe, you know, I think there was always an acceptance from us that one of them was going to have to go. And I didn't personally think it would be Mane, but obviously that's happened now, and you move forward from there, and you have to think, okay, how are we going to solidify this? Salah was the first piece of the jigsaw to make sure that was all done.
I think Mane go and done that to the fans, didn't it? It made us feel like, okay, if they're letting Mane go, then they're probably going to let Salah go.
True that.
And in fact, it's the opposite, isn't it? So,
yeah.
Just on that as well, I think the idea of trying to play, I don't think anyone's wanted at any point, but if that was even there, the idea of trying to play the supporters in some way, shape or form around the Salah thing has just completely gone. But I think the Mane thing makes that even clearer, if that was a thing, but I don't think it was.
Yeah.
2023, Firmino, Chamberlain and Keita of the lads who you might think may well get an extension one way or another. I don't think Chamberlain will, but 2024, Thiago, Matip, Gomez, and if he kicks on in an enormous way, Seb Vandenberg, are all up in 2024. The point about this, Rob, is that I think that for the renewals between now and then, and, you know, into 2025, there's only really Diaz, Trent and Jota, due to performance, two of them, if not possibly three, with Trent, that make it a structural issue in there. But regardless, it does push Liverpool's wage structure into a next phase of form. You can't pull back from that necessarily easily. It is there, it is present. However, it looks like five Champions League places are likely. There's the Amazon Champions League TV deal that's been mooted, so therefore TV money does continue to grow. My point here is that for me, all of this makes crystal clear that Liverpool's super club place continues to become more unassailable, not less.
Yes, that's absolutely right. Well, sometimes I'd have to say something in defence of some sort of a growing tide of mood. I'm going to use the word mood music again. When people go, yeah, Liverpool pleading poverty or austerity or various things at various times, but look at how big their wage budget is. But Liverpool have incrementally increased this wage budget relative to success. And I haven't got the numbers in front of me, but the percentage of wages to turnover with Liverpool, I think most studies will show, has been really, really quite a steady progress.
It's been very disciplined. Liverpool have been very disciplined.
Very, very disciplined. And this is what facilitates. And this is where I think you have to give SFSG all the credit in the world, where they've been true to their word. They say, when we have the revenue, we will spend the money. And, you know, Liverpool are going to post record numbers based on this financial year, I would think. I don't know when the exact date is, but you don't get to four, well, on the cusp of winning four trophies, doing one of the big final of the Champions League without making the most money this club's ever made in its history.
Year-end is June the 30th. Liverpool's year-end is June the 30th.
Depends what they include in it and when things are made. But in all real terms, it's going to be the most money Liverpool ever made. It is quite... And the most money anybody will have earned in the world outside, you know, I would say from commercial and prize money, probably by the time you put the whole package together. Mm. It is quite right that at a club, especially a club that pays incentive-linked deals to their players, is paying mega elite wages, and it's not a sign of new profligacy or wanting to be a hyper-capitalist club, as some will call it. Liverpool are one of the forces in the world, and they are just paying the going rate that they can afford. It's good housekeeping and where it should
be. They have to, though, don't they? Because players will just leave. Like, if Salah is justifiably being paid a lot less than other players in the Premier League who he thinks he's better than, you would feel personally a bit annoyed by it. I don't think, you know, I don't think that Salah being framed as sort of selfish or greedy, I don't think any of that really, really sticks, does it? Because you would be annoyed, wouldn't you?
It feels to me, Rob, the next sort of Thiago, Virgil van Dijk level sign. It's worth remembering when Virgil comes in, he comes in pretty close to being the highest earner from minute one. Thiago comes in very close to highest earner from minute one as well. That's the one that I think will, again, sort of either cement this or redefine it a little bit more. I mean, obviously, the obvious name that's been touted about for a period of time is Bellingham.
Yes, that's good.
Around that. But that will be that is to me the interesting one around where the wage structure is. The next time somebody comes in for a really, really big fee, where they live do they live in the gap between Van Dijk and Salah? Do they live beneath Van Dijk? Do they live around Van Dijk, if you see what I mean? Because we now know that Van Dijk is the second highest earner at the club.
Yes, I think the Bellingham one is going to be a test in terms of the wage. It's going to be another test of Liverpool's sell as well. This is the bonus, Jude, conversation. We did a gutter show last week, the award-winning gutter show behind our subscription service,
which is worth paying for.
It is definitely worth paying for. It's Winter Awards. Got to pay for awards. Mo Stewart on the show made the important point that Jadon Sancho signed for Man United a similar age to Jude Bellingham on $350,000 a week at Man U, which is ludicrous. And he's not getting a game, but he's crying all the way to the bank and not getting a game. And that's obviously not everything. There's lifetime career earnings as well as obvious sporting satisfaction to be considered. But it seems the idea that Liverpool get a young player in on $90,000 a week or $120,000 a week is for the birds in this particular context. So I think Jude is going to have to be, if Liverpool are serious about him, to be offered something close to the $200,000 a week mark as a basic. I think they might do it, but it will then knock on to some other conversations. And I think, but fortunately now
you feel like that's a tougher one, don't you, with ramifications than Salah, where they all know him, they all love him, they all think he's brilliant.
Yeah. Oh, having said that, the timing again may just be okay for us, because if it happens in a year's time, Darwin Nunez either has or hasn't made his mark. If Darwin Nunes does what we think Darwin Nunes isn't going to be, say he becomes the new Torres, then we'll be more than happy to be having a conversation about upping his current reported 140 to something around the 200 mark. The timing will be right. We don't want to want to do it, but then again, we'll want to do it because he'll have scored the goal. So we will. Yeah. Trent is coming to the point where we're going to have to give him the 200 grand a week pay rise anyway within 12 to 18 months.
Yeah.
Diaz, again, same sketch as Nunes. It depends how he does the next year. If he continues his progress, again, he will deserve the pay rise. So they will be the new emerging elite crop around who you'd worry in terms of relative wage conversations. So I think the timing may just be okay with Bellingham for us, I feel.
There's something, Sean, where it's great to get him tied down in the most practical sense. It takes the pressure off the post-World Cup period. I think it would have been the thing everyone talked about all the way through the World Cup in the Premier League and then through into next season if that has been continued to be the case. It's interesting to see if he can sprint to the line twice. But for me, what's really interesting is I think it actually makes next summer easier in a sense, because the attack to 2025 now looks to be in really good shape. There's obviously questions in different ways around Firmino, Carvalho, Cade Gordon. I think all three of them are present and correct in those conversations. But I think they're all broadly good conversations, even Firmino himself. You know, I'd love to see a season where Roberto Firmino earns a new deal. If that happens, yeah, then I think we've won another couple of trophies, to be quite honest.
Yeah, Firmino's an interesting one, isn't he? He's my favourite player. It's an emotional one, I think, Firmino, because of what he's done. So I feel like if you were to look at that forward line, the players that we've got, even with the youngsters coming through, and say to yourself, could we live without Firmino and still be elite? I think the answer is yes. Would you want to see Firmino go? Because every time he comes on and changes a game and plays the spells that he had last year, he's definitely got a lot of value for us. I think he contributed to some games. You know, you think about the Arsenal game last year. I know we just scored, but when he come on, the game changes, doesn't it? And it's like, oh, that's what we've been missing. I'd love Firmino to play his way back.
And then he wants to get into our end, which I'm always in favour of.
Yeah, yeah. But then you ask yourself the question, could you get some money for Firmino this year and get, you know, 20 million in the bank? Yes,
you'd have to replace him though, wouldn't you, straight away? I think.
And this season, you'd feel like the answer to that is yes. But if Carvalho or Gordon sees the moment, then maybe not.
And that's why
I say the questions for me. This is why it's exciting, Harry. Is that, you know, these are now, because you've got the absolute certainty and stability of, you know, of Jota, Darwin, Diaz, and Salah. And we're still not quite sure what that looks like, which I quite like as well. But what it means is, you know, the idea of Firmino, of Gordon, of Carvalho, of maybe changes in systems at some point, etc., etc. I'm really excited by them because there's the certainties that you want.
Yeah, it means you can work with uncertainty elsewhere. And I think we've got a lot of those question marks heading into next season, how the new players will adapt, the role that some of them will play. I think with Carvalho, we're not sure where he'll sit in the team. I think it allows you to go into next season and not be too worried about that because you do have that stability across the front line with Salah playing. And the Firmino question for me, like, you don't even have to think about that now for another, you know, 6 to 12 months. I think you can then push that down the line because you have so much certainty elsewhere. I think it will be interesting to see the role that some of the guys that, you know, Jota hasn't even been spoken about that much this summer because of the excitement around the new signings. Like, we've still got a few established players in there, and now with Salah staying, yeah, it means you can get excited by all of the unknowns rather than worry about them. That's what this Salah contract does.
It allows the continuity for me for next season, Rob, and certainly for the first half of next season down that right-hand side. We know pre-season's somewhat squashed, and we know that Liverpool finished the season really, really strongly in all competitions on all fronts. So the continuity down that right, I think, is going to prove to be important, especially with Alexander-Arnold and Salah in there as well. And then it's working the left out between Jota, Diaz and Darwin. I think, you know, there could be a shift for Salah in the medium term. He wouldn't be the first Liverpool great to change his role into his 30s. But for me, I'm of the view, you know, it means that the manager and what they're working on from minute one, it can be focusing on how to get the best out of the three I've mentioned, rather than in the world where we know that if we just do with Mo Salah what we did last season, he'll probably just be top scorer again.
Yeah, I mean, this is part of the lifting of the cloud, isn't it? Is that we can look at least 2 years ahead, 2.5 years ahead. I think, look, touch wood, but you don't see Salah falling off a cliff in terms of his fitness, even his pace. He just doesn't seem to be one of those morph of players who just follow that trajectory where he begins to decline. The decline will come, but I think we're a while off it. And his attendance rate is phenomenal. So you can go Mo and two others in the front three. You can do that week after week. In fact, it's almost ideal that the next two in the pecking order for that right-hand side, the next two left-footers, are both young enough
that they will be content. They should broadly be content with the fact that Mo will keep them out 90% of the time. I'm referring to Kate Gordon and Harvey Elliott. It's almost, but you know, you wouldn't want Diaz to be Mo's understudy because he's not going to see any game time, really, is he? You're going to have to compromise him to get him on the pitch. So the balance with your best player being the left footer on that side of the pitch feels absolutely right. And then you've got that choice between Nunes, Diaz and Jota, who you think, well, you're just going to go with form there, aren't you? The other two positions. And that's the position you want to remain in.
But you mentioned those other two players, Elliot and Gordon, and they've spoken quite a lot internally about Salah as a mentor to them and how he's taken Elliot under his wing quite a lot. And that's what you have now for the next few seasons. He can really be a mentor for these players, train them and talk to them in ways that, you know, maybe couldn't have happened if Salah wasn't going to be there. So I think it's exciting in that sense of their development. Yes, they've got Klopp, but now they've got one of the best players in the world to learn from as well.
Within all of it, there is the idea of the greatness question I alluded before with Rob to, for instance, players like, you know, Kenny Dalglish, shift position and role and function as he grows older. Sean, as I say, I don't quite see that in the short term. I don't see it being a thing for the start of next season. I don't even necessarily see it for a thing for the end of next season. But I do think that one of the things that most excites me about continuing to watch Salah for, you know, for at least ideally, you know, until 2025, if not beyond, is actually seeing the football that he becomes, because his ability to pick a pass, his ability to read the game, his ability to find teammates, to me, you know, I think he can always do with a little bit more work for every player. Yeah. Relationships happen. I think he's yet to really connect with Diaz in a way that we'd like. But ultimately, for me, it's been one of the most exciting things about watching him. He's provided twice for Mane in league games against Manchester City last season in key moments. And that's the footballer that I think we may well be talking about when we're talking about him in 2024.
Yeah, he's constantly developing, isn't he? So it's like another level to watching a young player develop and they come and become into a first team player. He's developing into like world elite level. Like that, you talk about those two assists, that pass with the outside of his boot just come out of nowhere last season, didn't it? It's like, where's that been? Mm. He's obviously been working on that and he uses it all the time. I think in terms of position and changing, that there might become a point where at the moment he's unplayable there. You play him there, even if he doesn't have a good game, he takes people off, he takes defenders out the game because they just want to be with him, so he opens up space elsewhere. There might become a point where the Premier League just learns how to deal with him in that position and you have to try and do something a bit differently. I don't see that being next season. I don't even see that being the season after. I don't even see it happening, but it might be. It's a possibility. So that might lead into why he goes, because he's played down the middle for us a few times and with that pace, he's always going to be dangerous because he can drop in, but also just be on the shoulder in the middle of things. Is massive. So he's just brilliant, isn't he? And it shows how fickle football fans or certainly I am, because you sort of talk yourself into a position where if you resign to him going, oh, maybe he's not that important, so maybe we can live without him, but then when he signs you're like, oh my god, he's so important to us.
Yeah, we're erasing the last 2 months.
But I think it is an important sort of question, this, about the remainder of his career. Rob, for me, 2025, he's 33. There's got to be a bit of an international football question, I'd have thought. African Cup of Nations has now gone to January 2024. The next World Cup is 2026, after the Qatar one that he's not going to be part of. It's easy enough, I think, now to imagine for the first time he retires a Liverpool player. Now, it might be that there's, you know, a sale on the terms like Mane, you know, may not be wholly out of the question, but it's easy enough now to imagine that he retires as a Liverpool player. Harry said before about him being settled. I'm really excited about that aspect as well. I love the idea, genuinely, of watching a 36-year-old Mo Salah. Let him go the whole hog. Let's have had 10 years of him.
Yeah, it would be lovely. I mean, a 33-year-old Mo Salah isn't going to be a finished Mo Salah. He's going to be I think the interesting thing is he could be an elite squad player between the ages of 33 and 36, still starting a lot of games. I mean, I think the great comparison comes to my mind is Arjen Robben, who managed to still be a really good version of himself up to his mid-30s, 36, albeit his games had to be managed a bit more. I do think as each year passes, you suspect that his family will put down more roots. Children will get older, will become more established in their schools and their relationships, and that only increases the chance of his family putting a nice pressure on him. Say, would it really harm you to finish your
stay
career
in Cheshire
another 2 years? So he lives in Cheshire, doesn't he?
Yeah.
So it, I mean, you know, it'd be a nice thing. You know, in an age where careers do seem to be shorter at clubs, and you know, we have many of our heroes, not Steven Gerrard, notwithstanding, but Suarez here, Torres there. They're not for life, are they? They're to be enjoyed in brief spurts. And it's and even Sadio has been a reminder of that for whatever the circumstances are, that he's not a Liverpool man for life. He's a massive part of our history now and forever will be. But it'd be nice to sort of park Mo Salah in 5 years' time and go, there you go, you, Stevie G, Dalglish, maybe Johnny Barnes too, but you were the ones.
His best mate, Rushy.
Yeah, but you were the ones who were lifers, you know? You were lifers, and that is, there's worse things you
can do. It doesn't look like he's slowing down, though, does he? That's the thing. Like, he's 30 now, isn't he? And he's averaging over 50 appearances a season. Like, I just think he's got at least 3 seasons left at this level where he can just keep on going, predominantly because he looks after himself to a level which is ridiculous, even for footballers' standards. I mean, we talk about James Milner, how old is he now? 37, obviously completely different situations, but we have seen that even at that age, maybe his games will be managed more, but he'll still have a huge impact and part to play. Like, I think now Salah commits to finishing his career at Liverpool and staying at Liverpool for the remainder of at least the best years of his career. And
I was going to say, the comparison I see is Cristiano Ronaldo. For obvious reasons.
He's 37, isn't he?
Yeah, he's 37, but just the way he looks after himself. So in the GQ article that he did, that infamous GQ article a couple of months ago, there was a part in it about what he's got at his house. And apparently at his house, he's almost got like this rehab centre. Like it's not just a gym, or like it's something that you'd expect to see in like a top spa or whatever, where he's got all these machines and stuff that he can go and just recover. And he spends a lot of time just in there recovering, focusing on himself. Obviously he doesn't drink. I mean, not many football players do now, but you can just see, and obviously it's a religion thing with him as well.
I don't know, a lot of them are in Ibiza at the moment.
They're all gone to Michaelis. But I just think the condition that he's in, every question he gets asked, he's always speaking about what he can achieve, whether it's personal numbers, whether it's trophies, Ballon d'Or. He's not going to stop, and it's great, and it would be great if he could finish his career with us.
He's scored 156 goals for Liverpool in all competitions, recently passed Harry Chambers in that list. Owen is only 2 ahead of him with 158. Then there's Dalglish, Fowler and Gerrard, I would say all within reach this season. Liddle's 228, Rob. Gordon Hodgson's 241.
And Rushy's taking the piss out.
Well, we're going to park Rushy for now. The question I was going to ask you was Roger Hunt. Roger Hunt's on 285. Salah's currently on 156. I think if he was to do a 2 year after the current effort, I think he can have Roger Hunt.
I'm going to... I discussed this with Steve Graves, actually, when we were the night of the deal, and I reframed the whole conversation around Liverpool's greatest goal scorer, because I'm afraid, Roger, you played in the lower leagues, so not all your goals are admissible, these elite-level leagues, as did Gordon Hodgson played pre-war, so that's a fuck of a long time ago.
We're not taking anything away from Gordon Hodgson. He holds our record for most hat-tricks.
Well, here's the stats. I thought Albert Stobbins did 3 in 6 successive games. I think that's a record, by the way. But the interesting thing about Salah is, in terms of goals per games, he's second in the all-time list already. I think only the pre-war Hodgson.
Only Hodgson, yeah.
He eclipses him on that. So in many respects, Mo is...
They all came in the first division, by the way.
He's in fifth, and what's the stat for fifth?
For all-time scorer?
Yeah.
All-time scorer in fifth place is Gerrard on 186. He can do that this season. So he's on 156 now.
I really want to break into that top five, but then he's got, you know, that's not even a high ceiling for him then, is it?
I mean, all of Hodgson's were top flight, and there was no European footballer hastened to add.
Fair.
So, you know, I think if you want to talk Hodgson down, you're going to have to go elsewhere. I mean, this is that is true, but you know, he's listen, he banged them in for Liverpool, Rob. And when we're all dead, I'd let me podcast not to be taken off me.
Liverpool voted Tory and had white shorts. It's a different club.
Well, can he have Roger Hunt is what I'm asking, a 285.
It's a big bloody ass. You know, the thing about all my heroes, whenever I've got carried at about this age, you look at their goal returns and you go, my God, that's... I remember thinking, even Kenny, who wasn't an out and out striker, had a hell of a goal return at 30 for Liverpool. Rush, however well it ended, you wanted to see what it was like when he's about 26 and he'd been at the club 7 years, his goal per game. It will decline, his goal per game average. You do have to factor that. There's a chance he has one more season, I think, where he goes up. It might do. But generally, that graph is not going upwards. It just doesn't with age. Even if it peters out gradually. So the answer, will he get to run to Roger Hunt? I don't know. I need to look at that.
Need to do the maths.
Let's do the maths.
He's got 31 back-to-back in his last 2 seasons.
What's the gap against?
The gap to Hunt is 100, and to pass Hunt, he's got to get another 130.
In all comps. That's a tall order. It's doable.
Yeah. I think it is doable. He's got 31 in each of his last two seasons. It's worth pointing out. Rushy, by the way, in the seasons that Rob mentions, goes 30, 31, 47, 26 lean year.
That's why I got
33 and 40. That's what Rushy goes at. It is worth saying. And no wonder, like, Salah's looking at those numbers. He must be on LFC History every night. Salah going, come on, Rushy. Ringing him going, are you sure?
Salah does love the individual glory, though, doesn't
he? He
always talks about, you know, but if the team's the most important, to do it for the team. He loves it. He loves it.
Rushy signed for Liverpool as an 18-year-old, we should add. Made his debut at 19, and I think probably played his last game as a 34-year-old, 35-year-old. With only 1 year abroad in Juventus.
I know, but I've just done the seasons there where there was a lot of goals, wasn't there, in the
seasons? That's all pre-Juventus.
Yeah.
I don't think the drop-off comes, by the way, in this three-year period, because going back to Ronaldo and Messi, like, they were at the peak of their powers when they were 32, 33. They were still banging in silly numbers. Even Ronaldo now, he still has a good number to turn, doesn't he, at that age? But obviously that has dropped off. I think the clever with the length of the deal as well, like 3 years. I mean, I know Klopp's was similar, but it's rare you get a 3 year extension, is it? They're usually like 4 years as like sort of a standard thing. And I just think that they know that they're looking at this and they're thinking, how do we get maximum value out of this deal? And it's 3 years.
Be the greatest Liverpool player of the Premier League era by the end of all this, Rob. It's Gerrard, really, who he's up against, I think, for that one, given especially the longevity question. Obviously, there's patches where Suarez absolutely bangs them in and looks absolutely incredible. Torres, you know, there's a couple of seasons in there of astonishing level. You can look around the other areas of the pitch. His biggest rival could actually be Virgil van Dijk by the end of it, if you see what I mean. But that is the territory we are in here.
Well, he's certainly the greatest Liverpool player of the post-Gerrard era, which is quietly creeping towards a decade, and I think he might well be that for at least another decade. I think it's going to be a hard thing to eclipse. It's always, obviously, it's a cliche to say it's difficult to compare eras, but it's very particularly difficult to compare, say, Gerrard and Salah, for example, not because of eras, just because of the sides they played in. They're just so very different. And then trying to compare him with the other greats who played in truly elite sides. Well, it's a long time ago. But in terms of, I think you can just look at their impact on the team. What is their impact on the team? How much did the team rely on them? How talismanic were they for that team? And he's as talismanic as it gets. You know, he's unbelievable. And I think we should just leave him as the king of his era and forever may he reign.
And he's won everything and he wants to win everything all over again. And I think he can. And that's what you can talk about impact. His desire and everything that comes along with Salah as a person as well, not just his footballing ability, but how hungry he is, how much he constantly just wants to win everything and can go on to do so. I think will define, you know, I think the next two seasons, whatever he wins, will define where he is on that list. And I think he can win it all again.
Yep. Let's hope he wins it all again. It's time to get some more trophies, isn't it? Time to get the big ones back.
Excellent stuff. Do download the app if you get the opportunity to do so. You get free tokens there to listen to all sorts of stuff. James Pearce to come today on the nature of this deal and how it's all come together. London Live next Saturday. Be wonderful to see you there if you are available to do so. Thank you very much indeed to Andy Heaton for producing through slightly difficult and noisy circumstances. Harriet Pryor, Sean O'Donnell and Rob Gutman. That has been the Anfield Wrap. Looking forward to yet more Mo Salah. May it never end. Sports Social Podcast Network.